Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. This hour on the program, do you remember a summer day of your childhood and running into the blossoming fields surrounding your home, or a game of stickball outside in the street, or jumping on your bicycle and riding on down to the store for a cooling soda pop on a hot summer day? Do you remember how that felt and looked and smelled and sounded? Do you remember the excitement, the adventure, and the contentment of that day? And as an adult, do you have many days like that now? Happy, content, worry-free, easy and effortless to have a day like that as a child, maybe not so immediately easy nowadays in our adult lives. This hour we'll talk about rediscovering the child within us, and this holiday season might be an ideal time to begin. Back with us, spiritual writer Thomas Moore. He's the author of Care of the Soul, and his new book is A Life at Work, The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. Welcome back to Open Line, Thomas Moore. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Fred. Very happy to be with you.
And we're at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at openline@wosu.org. Tom, you're having an interesting adventure up there in New England. You're rediscovering your child through a power outage of 7 days.
We certainly are. It's been actually over a week, and I haven't been here this whole time. I was out of town for part of it, but it's a complete shutdown.
Well, you know, I remember as a child that adventure was kind of right down the block. You know, you could walk into the fields that surrounded my home, or you could just, you know, take your bike on down to the delicatessen and buy some baseball cards. And you know, as an adult, there seems to be more worry and more care and more pressure to produce. And what happened?
We grow up, and I mean, it's natural that we're going to be thinking differently about things and, you know, taking on responsibilities and all that. But I think we go too far, and the world around us demands us to grow up too fast. And I know for our kids, we made a very conscious choice to live in New Hampshire as a way of trying to give our kids a longer childhood. And we put them in a Steiner school for the same reason, because we felt that that school would give them a chance to be kids much for longer, even if it's only two or three more years, and to have a full childhood experience.
Hmm.
So I think that helps. You know, the way you're describing childhood indicates, you know, you must be close to it to be able to use all those concrete adjectives for it. I think that the world around us, though, does not favor that childhood. It's not that we've grown up, it's that the world itself has become a little too adult and too somber and mechanical.
Mm-hmm. I think somber and mechanical are the words. In New Hampshire, Tom, your children, do you give them a better childhood because it's a small town and there's lots of open space? How does that work?
Well, New Hampshire, I don't know how to compare it to Ohio, but New Hampshire is really it's a state that doesn't have any big cities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of small towns, a lot of rural areas, and so you're always, as you were saying, you're always very close to the farm. I mean, like we grew up, when our kids grew up, we were part of a farm that was about a quarter mile from us, one of these CSAs, a community-supported agricultural farm.
Mm-hmm.
So, you pay a little bit every year, and then you get all your food organically grown from there, and you're around the animals. And so our kids were, you know, grew up with the animal life and farm life, and they had raw milk since they were, you know, toddlers. So they just have a different experience than if they were in a city.
Yeah, and I think that contact with our radio station, WOS, here is right along a river here. There's a river right behind us.
Oh.
I mean, you know, 100 yards, and mm-hmm. you can walk down to it. But what's interesting is that I rarely see any kids, let alone adults, along the river, and
yeah.
there's so much to discover there, and people, we can walk right by it and forget it.
Yes. You know, I've spent a lot of time at rivers in my life, and I love sitting by the river. I remember one year I taught at the University of Windsor right across from Detroit,
mm-hmm.
and whenever I finish my class, I go down and sit on the riverbank, and I'd be there for hours just watching everything. To me, it's that kind of contemplation is really, really very good, and now I travel a lot and go to a lot of American towns and cities, and I notice how many times the rivers are inaccessible to people, or you're saying they're accessible, but people aren't using them. You know, they're not taking advantage of them.
Yeah, we have right across from us Ohio State University has what they call a demonstration wetland. It's an artificial wetland they've created to measure how wetlands work so they can maybe do some restoration work along the Gulf of Mexico. And I remember when it first opened several years ago, the managers of the wetland got ready. They said, we can't have people wading in the water. You know, these kids are going to come down and want to play in the wetland. How are we going to stop that? What are we going to do?
Right.
Well, no kids came.
Yeah.
They never had the problem.
Wow, that's something.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know it all my life. Of course, I grew up, you know, like 150 years ago, you know, and there was things where I remember growing up on a farm, and I would spend hours at the little stream that went through. I mean, I couldn't bear being away from it. You know, I just loved all the life that was in there, and just totally captivated by it.
And it takes a while to see it, too. A brief visit, you'll miss so much. I mean,
that's right.
You'll miss the river rat building her nest.
Right.
You'll miss the blue heron flying quietly over the river, you know,
right.
All of a sudden. Yeah, you miss all that. Well, another part of being a child, I think, is spontaneity. I remember, and it wasn't too long ago, fortunately, as an adult, packing up, I then own a van, and I thought, well, I'm either going to travel to the West Coast or the East Coast, but I don't know. So I said, I'll get out in the morning, and I will get to the freeway interchange, and I will make my decision there.
Whoa. That's pretty good.
That was pretty good, and I went west, and I never regretted that yet. But,
that is amazing.
So how do we, but it's so hard. How do we get it back, all of these good things?
You know, I think it's there all the time. My psychological theory is that we don't grow out of childhood. We carry it with us all the time. So I think we pile up all of our past. You know, I don't like to see it as moving in a straight line. And having been a therapist for a long time, I realized how much childhood experience and emotion and relationship is right there beneath the surface, so that it does influence our activities and our relationships all the time. So I don't think it's a matter of going out and finding it or making it, but it's a matter of opening up to it. And and also, like, I think what your story is so interesting of choosing where to go, which direction to go, and that you can you can't allow yourself a way to break out of the seriousness around us. I mean, you have to kind of be, I've always felt, you have to be a maverick, or you have to be eccentric or something to be able to be freed of whatever it is that keeps us tied down and keeps the childhood away from us.
You know, and of course, do you think, Tom, that the prevailing culture is one of, I guess, of over-seriousness? And if so, why? How did that happen?
The way culture has developed, the way society has developed, first of all, we moved away from the natural world, and the childhood and the natural world are very closely related. I don't want to romanticize that too much. I think growing up in a city, you know, can also, you can have a great childhood. But there's something about the natural world and the relationship to it that's important to us. And you know, the way we're developing our country, it really bugs me, because everywhere you go, you see strip malls connecting towns. So there is no break between towns and between cities. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to find, you know, that kind of natural enchantment that we really need.
And, you know, it's interesting. Very few cities and towns are immune from that. One that is comes to mind is Boulder, Colorado, and there is they've established a two-mile green space around the town, and nobody can build there.
Oh, that's right.
And you know, and they use it for parkland and other such things. But that's rare, I think.
Well, I was just in Boulder about 3 weeks ago.
Just
happened to be there doing some teaching, and I you know, I think there's a lot I can see outside the town, but you know, that town has really built up a lot. Shopping malls where it used to you just have open space. So even though I think that's terrific, and you have to really do that in a town, you have to forcefully try to maintain yourself. We did that in our little town where I live. We have to be very, very cautious that, you know, we don't have any fast food restaurants in our town yet. I hope we can keep them out.
Yeah.
Not that they're bad and horrible, but you have to contain that kind of world. You know, you've got to contain it and preserve a livable space.
Author Thomas Moore is with us, author of Care of the Soul and his new book, A Life at Work, The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. 614-292-8513, open line at WOSU.org for brief emails. You know, Tom, we also could talk about, with regard to work, you know, work culture, you know, the culture within an organization can lead us to be childlike or non-childlike. I'll have to say that radio is pretty good about that. there's just an awful lot of ribbing and teasing and fooling around, and no public figure is immune from acerbic comment. So I think it might be a little different at IBM, you know.
That's great. Well, radio is a form of play, too, isn't it?
It is.
I love radio. You know, I've been doing a lot of work with radio since I started writing, and I love it. It's very playful, usually. And even if it's really serious, I've been in some really bad situations on radio. And, you know, I've been interviewed by people who hate my books, you know, and that kind of thing. And so that's an interesting situation, but it turns out to be such a playful thing because I always speak to the audience, and then here's this person ranting and raving against me. And it's kind of an interesting drama, you know, that goes on in radio.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about radio as playful. I don't know if I've thought about doing a radio show as playful. Maybe I haven't, but I just haven't made that extrinsic.
Well, you would. I don't know how you feel because you do it as a living. But I, you know, from my experience of it, and even some television, there's a lot of creating an environment, like, you know, when you're talking to each other as we do on the radio, it's a bit of a dramatic form.
Oh, yes.
You know, and so there's a dialogue that goes on, but you're aware that you're not just talking to each other, that other people are listening in. And then you get to interchange with them sometimes. And there are a lot of experiences that I've had on radio that I wouldn't have anywhere else.
Hmm.
And so to me, it's like a dramatic form. It's an art form. You don't talk the way you normally would.
Right.
I mean, you want to be spontaneous and natural, but at the same time, there's no way to. Even that naturalness is kind of a play. You know, it's a drama.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that part of it is playful, at least as I experience it.
No, I think that's right. It is. I always think of it. It's a journalistic presentation, but it's a theatrical presentation.
Mm-hmm.
It's as though the two of us are standing on a stage and
right.
having the conversation in front of an audience. We can't see the audience, but they're there.
That's right.
And it is definitely theater, with you know, rising and falls of verbal action and, you know, plateaus and then peaks. And
right.
And I think you and I both consciously have a feeling about that. We understand intuitively. We understand how that works.
Right.
Yeah. You know, what about I think you said to me just yesterday when we talked something about the true meaning of Christmas.
Right.
Having to do with Santa Claus.
Right.
Yeah, right.
That's what I've been doing. I've been talking. I've been doing it for a number of years now, saying that the true spirit of Christmas is Santa Claus. I just came back from Ireland yesterday, and I spent about 10 days in Ireland talking about Christmas. And one of the talks I gave in Belfast was called Santa, the Holy One, because the word Santa means holy. You know, it's like saint means holy. Santa really is a holy figure. And what I was trying to say, I mean, I don't want to give this whole big lecture I give, but what I was trying to say is that Santa is one of the few figures of imagination we have left that children can really relate to. Adults can too, but maybe not with the same sense of reality as children, obviously. But I don't know if there are any other figures that have such a reality, figures of imagination, that have so much reality. I was on a train in Ireland a few days ago, and you could do it here, any place. And I was on a train, and this father came in dressed in a Santa suit. And I thought, no, he's not being arrested or taken off to a hospital, you know. We understand somehow that this figure exists, and we can play with him, we can dress up like him, and so I think Santa is really a very fascinating figure, and I do think he embodies the real spirit of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm speaking as someone who really has studied theology for a long time. I don't think we should give Christmas over to the theologians to discuss the intricacies of theology. I think that it's about a figure who understands what it means to give, to relate to children, to have a good sense, a good spirit, create friendliness in the world, and have bring the world together. I mean, he travels the whole world on Christmas Eve. You know, it's not just one country. So there's an awful lot in Santa Claus that I really love.
I remember Christmas morning was just magical, you know, when I was a kid.
Oh.
I mean, it was just, we had the tree downstairs, and the scent from the tree permeated the house, you know, and there had been candles laid in the previous evening. And of course, it was the excitement of a kid. Am I going to get the electric train set or
right.
whatever I'm going to get, you know? I don't know. For me as an adult, that's frankly mostly gone. I wouldn't know how to recapture that.
I'm not sure that it's necessary or it's possible to recapture that exact experience. There's something naive about that for kids. That's wonderful that kids can believe in Santa Claus the way they do. It's necessary that we grow out of that, that we stop believing in a lot of things as we grow up. But I don't think that means that we have to starve our imaginations and now be absolutely serious about everything and not allow into us. Mm-hmm. So I think it is possible as adults to do as much as we possibly can to recreate and enjoy that spirit that's there without being naive.
What might one do to recreate that?
Well, one thing would be to be around children, you know, I mean, to be able to pick up that spirit and be able to play with it. Like I said, the father coming onto the train dressed up as Santa, I mean, he didn't believe in Santa Claus, I assume, but he's able to play with his kids and kind of get into his own childlikeness by responding to his children. So if we really do, engage with children, go out of our way to do that, I think that helps a great deal. Or to get in that spirit of Santa, which is to see, I think the thing is about we could give gifts to each other in a way that is not such a burden.
Yeah.
You know, if we could learn how to shop better, I've been saying this for so long, you know, part of the care of the soul is good shopping. Mm-hmm. You know, if we could learn how to shop and really not be so driven and not substitute quantity for quality, to really think carefully about it and try to enjoy and arrange our shopping so that we really do enjoy it, I think we could get into the spirit of Christmas in a way that we'd look forward to it every year.
I think that's really important because I remember some years ago, before I changed my behavior, Christmas was a time of great tension because how am I going to find the appropriate gift? And when am I going to find the time to get that appropriate gift? And so what I did and my family did, we decided for our adult friends, unless we find something during the year that is extraordinarily appropriate, you know, something they'd really value, we're not going to give gifts. And we asked that they not give us gifts. And we'll go and have a glass of wine with them. You know, we'll go out and, but we're not running around trying to get gifts that people don't
really
need anyway.
You can limit the gift giving, and you could focus on kids, or you can make it more like a kid thing. One of the things we do in our family is every year I go out and I get toys for the adults, you know, simple things. I was in Dublin the other day, and I found this in a little tiny shop. I found a little wooden puzzle I'd never seen before, and I thought, oh, I have to get that, because I still think that gift giving should be more simple like that and should be focused on toys rather than serious things.
Great.
So that's one way I do it myself, and I enjoy it so much, and now my family expects it. You know, if I don't give them some really strange toy, they're disappointed.
What kinds of toys have you given? You mentioned the puzzle, but...
Yeah. What? Well, every year I usually get some sort of game, board game that we can all play. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find a new board game, and, you know, the kids get older, and it's a challenge, but I find that pretty interesting, and it means that I have to go to really interesting toy shops.
Yeah.
Now, see, that's all getting in touch with a child, you know? You go to the toy shop, and you can do that as an adult and be frowning and worried and all that, or you can go in there and really enjoy things and see what's there that really delights you.
Sure.
So I don't get a chance to go into toy shops too often, but I mean, I don't take the opportunity, but... at Christmas time, that really becomes one of my pleasures. And so there I was in town looking, you know, all these people buying things with their, you know, with anxiety. And I was just looking for the most interesting little toy I could find. And I think I paid like $5 for it. You know, we're not talking big expenses.
Sure.
So I think you can actually shape your Christmas so that you do imitate who Santa Claus is. And behind all that is St. Nicholas, who was a saint who gave things to people. And there is a holiness in that. So I think it is very much in the spirit of Christmas to be thinking about other people, doing what's necessary to tone down the anxiety, not spending so much money, but using your head more, your imagination, to really get a gift that will mean something. Not meaningful gift, but I mean one that can be not terribly expensive, but fun.
Mm-hmm.
So the fun part is really important.
With Thomas Moore at 614-292-8513. Here's Walter. Hello, Walter.
Hello. I first of all want to thank Dr. Moore for his book, The Dark Nights of the Soul, because not only has been helpful to me, but I've recommended it to a lot of other people. I have a philosophical question and a biblical question, and I don't mean to get us off the subject of practicalities of Christmas, so you can come back to this later if it works out best. You are undoubtedly aware, probably as a philosopher, psychologist, of Paul Ricoeur's idea that we encounter reality on two levels, one as a child, a second naivete, and one we see the facts of life and we hold those two things together, and even though they appear contradictory, they're not necessarily. And I'm wondering how, number one, that idea of the second naivete, of being able to go beyond the facts about what Christmas is all about or where it came from and so forth, and enjoy it on a childlike level, kind of meshes with your the attributes of childhood, spontaneity and so forth. That's question one. Question two is, what do you think Jesus was really talking about when he exalted childhood as an example of the kingdom of God? I think that's so misinterpreted, and I don't know how to interpret it myself. So if those two things make any sense and add to the conversation, I'd be happy to turn off now and listen on the radio.
Okay, surely.
Well, thank you. I'll try to the second question first, although I risk forgetting the first one. I'll try the second one first. That is about why was he referring to childhood and what did he mean? Here's what I think. I think that the whole of the Gospels is about trying to reimagine life, reimagine the world we live in. And so that really is a way of being in this world where we're not narcissistic, when we're not just having to take care of ourselves. I think that's really the heart of it all. And in order to do that, you have to step out of the culture, serious culture, as it's presented to us. You can't be fully into the society and be able to do that. And I think that from what I see in the Gospels, that the children are not part of that society because they haven't been brought into it fully yet. So they become an image for or metaphor for a way of being in this world where you haven't sold your soul to that, to the narcissistic society. That's very theoretical, I guess, to say all that, but that was the way the question was asked.
Well, practically speaking, if we entirely identified with our society, we could be identifying with warfare, torture, and a number of other things.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Or the pursuit of money at all costs.
Yeah.
I mean, I think money's fine, but you can sell your soul to it. So I think the gospel stories tell us over and over again. I think every single parable is about making that choice to either live the conventional life or to step outside of it and reimagine it, repicture it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it's about. So that the celebration of Christmas, to be very, to follow through on that, really is a celebration of the child. It's a celebration of that possibility of being able to live in such a way that you are, you call it a second naivete, that you're willing to be kind of foolish because you're not going to be caught up in that worldly wisdom that says you should be spending all your time making money and have a certain level of success and income and all of that. And achieving your means, what you want by stepping on other people and ultimately, of course, being caught up in the violence around us.
Sure. We do have to take a break right now, and we'll be back. And callers, it's Thomas Moore, Care of the Soul author, and his new book, A Life at Work, The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. We'll be back after these messages at WOSU 820 NPR News.
In Brazil, a young man stops his work as an insurance agent and becomes a crusader for workers' freedom.
Now I can really say that besides the adventure, I'm doing good for people.
Eu sou Indiana Jones moderno.
I'm a modern-day Indiana Jones.
I'm Tess Vigeland, modern-day freedom riders, next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
Marketplace begins at 6 o'clock tonight, now on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News, and Classical Music. Good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning.
WOSU News reports on stories from around the state and in your backyard.
Mary Jo! Mary! Mary Jo!
Flanked by bundled-up, sign-waving supporters, Democrat Mary Jo Kilroy held a brief news conference. Unofficial results showed Kilroy had beaten Republican Steve Stivers by more than 2,000 votes.
Get more from your news with the award-winning WOSU news team on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News, and classical music.
We'll get back to Open Line in just a moment. First, taking a look at the weather forecast for today. Cloudy skies and a high near 40 degrees. For tonight, a good chance of rain throughout the night and a low of 35. And then for Friday, rain in the morning. It'll taper off later in the afternoon and a warmer day on Friday with a high near 50. Currently 30 degrees in downtown Columbus. And now, back to Open Line.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. We're talking with writer Thomas Moore, author of Care of the Soul, and his new book, A Life at Work, The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. And we're talking here in the holiday season about recapturing that spontaneous incident, a carefree child within us in a world that can get awfully serious and awfully just dull and mechanical. Walter, by the way, we just answered one of your questions, and we both forgot what, in his childlike spirit, we both forgot what your first question was. If you'd like to call back and re-ask it, we're happy to have you back on the show with us. We're at 614-292-8513. How do you recapture in this holiday season or any time that childlike spirit in you? Daoud is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Peace good. To the world. I have to say, I'm glad to call in to talk about something other than economics, talk about something I really know something about.
All right.
One of the things I really wanted to say is that frivolity, if you think about being a child, and I could look back on my childhood, frivolity is the key. And I just finished working 31 straight years of my life in corporate America, and I'm just going to be 52 here in a few months.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one thing I would recommend people to do is not to start work too soon in life. My mom, she raised 12 of us. She cooked everything from scratch. I grew up in Newark, New Jersey, and we had some summers that were phenomenal. I mean, we stayed out all day long, went in, ate, talked to our mom, went back out and played football on the street. You know, anytime we wanted to have a football game or something with another neighborhood, you know, we wouldn't go through coaches or anything else like that. We just, you know, send a couple of guys over from our side of town and say, hey, we want to play you guys, meet us down at the park, and we'd meet.
Sure.
So much, you know, we learned conflict resolution because we didn't have parents on the sidelines telling us how to be.
Yeah, right.
And we don't have that anymore. You know, people grow up, kids grow up without being able to really play and enjoy themselves. And all this stuff that we do with the video games and everything else like that is so artificial. We used to take clothespins and make little figures out of them.
I remember that, yeah.
I mean, we did all kinds of crazy, wild things, and just sitting around putting our feet, you know, on the curb and letting water come out of fire hydrants. And we used to run down to the corner store and get vegetables, take them back home, and Mom would cook them. And we even had vegetable trucks that used to come around every day. She'd give us a couple of dollars. We'd go buy whatever was on the truck, and she'd cook it. We'd sit around, we'd talk, and everything like that. So it was just a totally stream of consciousness, frivolity. That's what childhood is about.
Well, you know, Dad, were you able to retain that frivolity in the corporate world? I mean, how did you do it, or if you did?
Well, I think I did a pretty good job of that because I was always one of these managers who, whenever anybody needed to have time off for their family or whatever else like that, that was time that they got. And no one was ever worried about asking me for time off for any reason. And it was just really sad because people would feel bad about asking for time off to do things with their family, you know, and I've never had a problem with that through my whole corporate career. And I've seen many children grow up, and a lot of them are going to college now and everything. It just really makes me feel good to know that the people I worked with, you know, every last one of them knows that family was number one with me, and it, you know, and they were able to really enjoy their lives and have fun with their kids.
Surely.
You know, as they were growing up and as they were going through corporate America, it's very difficult to be in corporate America and have a real life. And that's a real sad thing, which I think we're going to start to realize, and I hope,
yeah,
that frivolity of living.
Tom, your comments.
Well, I love this word, frivolity. I think it's a great idea. I think actually Walter was asking something similar. He was saying, how can you be an adult and have a sort of a second child, you know, childhood, and be a child, let's say, in corporate America? Well, you can be more playful. You don't have to take it all so seriously.
you can let yourself go. I mean, I think what we do is create this highly formal notion of business. And yet behind it all is a kind of game. Business itself is really a big game. I mean, in a very profound way, there have been several massive books written about the game, game nature of business and even politics. And you can see it once you start looking for it. And so I think what we can do is bring more frivolity into whatever we're doing and realize that you don't have to be so serious and adult with everything we do. And in fact, maybe we can connect with each other better and actually find some of our creativity by giving up some of that adult seriousness.
Mm-hmm. So, Dowd, did you find during the day, how did you lighten up your day in corporate America?
Well, one of the things that I have to say, I really used the tactics my mom used with us raising 12 kids, 8 of them being girls, is that you have to understand that you're in the eye of the storm and there's all kinds of things that are going to happen, and understand that you don't have all the answers, but you're together as one group and you are going to be successful as one group. And that was something, as a manager and as a director, I was able to do because I let people know I didn't have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
I just hired the very best people I possibly could and got more and more people involved in the process of hiring people, and it became more like a family environment, and people really didn't want to let each other down.
Very nice.
And that's really what made it exciting for me and fun. And anybody out there I've worked with in the area, I hope you're hearing this, and know that I thank you all for just being out there and really working hard, but most of all remembering that it was more important for you to be who you really are at work. And that's very tough to do in corporate America. It's extremely tough because you got to put up these shields and all that. And believe me, it's not worth the extra energy. It takes away productivity.
Excellent. Doug, thanks so much. That's really great.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling us. Speaking of a playful atmosphere at work, Tom, and I mentioned radio is great mm-hmm. for a playful atmosphere. I remember we had a former manager here who was very playful, but he drew the line at we decided to surprise one another with a squirt gun attacks in the middle of the day. So people were bringing squirt guns and sneaking up behind and squirting one another, having battles in the hall. And he drew the line at that. So he's put away the squirt guns. People coming down here might see them. And we thought that would be fun if they saw them. So he's since retired, but we haven't challenged the current management in terms of squirt guns. So
I'm going to be careful if I visit down there.
Yeah, really, no kidding. Walter, quickly, you're back with your first question.
Yes. Thank you for your thoughtfulness on that. By the way, hobbits give only gifts from their own lives, their heirlooms, the things they prize to other people, but I just wanted to throw that in from Mr. Tolkien. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what I'm referring to is the idea that as adults we pride ourselves on being able to be very factual, look at things scientifically, critically, mm-hmm. and so forth. Elie Wiesel, in an interview about the way he approaches the Bible, said, but beyond that, there's innocence and naivete. One must look through those eyes as well. And even though they seem contradictory, they're not. That we can enter a second naivete, a childhoodness and innocence. And my question relating to your presentation, your words are, is that a form of euphoria that we like that adds up to the kind of experience you're talking about in our consciousness?
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
It didn't to me, but Tom did.
Well, I would just go back to this notion that I think human beings can do more than one thing at a time.
Yes.
And you can be adult and child at the same time.
What it's saying.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's
And they're not contradictory.
They're not contradictory at all. But on the other hand, you have to do it in an operational way. You can't just do it in your head. You have to actually do it. So you may have to maybe develop habits where you don't take everything quite so seriously.
That's a good point.
I mean, I do this when I give all these lectures, I try to have fun. I lift it out of the – I don't like to give these heavy, talks that are so adult. And yet you can get a lot done. You can get a lot accomplished that way because, through that playfulness, people draw closer to you.
They're engaged.
And it also brings – for me, it brings out my creative thought. So.
Yeah.
If I'm really sober and so serious, I can't develop really any good thoughts as I'm trying to work. So I think the two are very, very useful to bring them together. But if you take either extreme, I think you end up in something that's not very useful.
You need both sides of it.
Don't you think we, but yes, don't you think we think of them as contradictory very often?
We think of them as contradictory. We do, because we have this linear evolutionary thought that we grow out of childhood.
Yeah.
That's what I started saying today. I'd like to get rid of that idea that we grow out of childhood. We don't.
I think this is very valuable. Thank you.
Walter, thanks so much. And we're at 614-292-8513. Emails to openline at WOSU.org with Thomas Moore talking about recapturing our child even as an adult. We have actually, apropos of what we were talking with Walter about, we have an email from Jason. I was hoping your guest could address how we keep a healthy balance between entertaining our inner child and maintaining our adult life. All of us know those who seem more concerned about living for the moment and enjoying the day and not spending enough time building a nest egg for the future. But we also know those who focus all their attention on work and the future and have forgotten how to enjoy the moments of each day. Very interesting.
It is very interesting. First of all, I'm never in favor of a balance. I always say, if you ever find a really balanced person, you know, do you really want to spend much time with them? You know, their balance is a little too neat, maybe too much in the head. So I think what you need to do is be able to passionately maybe go to extremes on both sides, but try to keep both represented in your life so that you can be a really adult, responsible person, you know, building up your nest egg or whatever you need, and at the very same time cultivating these child virtues, because you need both. You need both all the time. It's not going back and forth, and it's not trying to keep a perfect amount of each one, but you actually bounce back and forth between the extremes, being really a child, like, you know, using your squirt guns one day and then having to have a meeting about how we're going to survive financially the next day.
Do you think, Tom, that part of rediscovering our child nature is rediscovering our sadness?
Oh, yes. You know, as I say, I've been giving a lot of talks in the past few weeks, and this is the darkest time of year. So what I've been doing is talking about the importance of being in touch with the sadness, both our personal sadness at this time of year and cultural sadness. And so I've been talking about the events of India quite a bit, you know, the tragedy over there and other things that happened during the year, to recall those, to reflect on them, and to not to jump the gun on the happiness or the light of Christmas, but rather to stay in touch with all these the sadness. And you know, people say they get depressed at Christmas time. It makes sense. I mean, the days are so short, and I think that the natural world tells us how to be. So that's an important thing to do. And then when you know, when it does come to celebrate the family and the gift giving and whatever it is of Christmas, then it means something to us, and it's better than just trying to, you know, to avoid the sadness. It just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. You know, I actually think, and I have no evidence for this, but I think that being out of contact with our child nature can actually harm our health. I think it can raise stress and anxiety, and therefore blood pressure, maybe even cholesterol. I can't prove it, but I just think it can be deadly.
Well, yes. I think so. Kids are, you know, basically, you know, childhood, you don't have the same aches and pains you do as an adult, I can tell you. There's a big change there as you get older. So I think it makes sense that if you can keep that child spirit alive in you, that you're going to be a healthier person. I don't have any doubt about that at all. But there's one other thing that's been on my mind. I have to say, I keep hearing my friend James Hillman, who's a writer who's written about child, that we don't want to romanticize this child. Children are tough, too, you know.
Yeah.
They're always complaining, you know, something. You know, they may be crying. You have to change their diapers if they're really small. I mean, it's not that so-called inner child can be romanticized. And the thing to do is to keep all aspects of child in mind, so that to be in touch with this I would call it rather sort of an archetypal child. It's not right to just think of the good side. You got to think of the bad side as well, so that you know you can cry or you can complain or you can have needs, and you can be very dependent, and you can be looking for father and mother figures. That's also part of the child.
Also, you know, of course, I realize when I think back to my childhood of playing in the fields that surrounded our home and biking down to the creek and stuff, I realize that I'm editing a great deal out I don't know if everybody's this way, but I have the facility of being able to remember past times and not think of the bad times. They just don't occur. So, I mean, I know we were nasty to one another.
Right.
We got into fights. I mean, that's nothing like what we're advocating here. Yeah. Thomas More with us, of course, author of Care of the Soul and his new book, A Life at Work, The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. And we wonder if you, like Daoud or Walter, have any ideas about, or Jason, have any ideas about how you recapture your childhood and in what ways you do that. And I guess, do we need to make a distinction, Tom, between being childlike and being childish? Is there a distinction?
Sure. Yeah, being childish is I think most people understand it's taking on this child and identifying with the child, or unconsciously just sort of acting out like a child. That's very different from intentionally and artfully inviting child qualities and virtues into your life and sorting them out so that they can work out very smoothly with your adult qualities as well. When you're childish, you can't. You just sort of collapse into this child place, and it's a regressive kind of thing. It's not really being in touch with this constant archetypal child. Mm-hmm. So it's a problem to, you know, a lot of people can't get into that place, so they're very childish in the way they respond to difficult situations or to people or whatever. You see it a lot in families, and maybe at Christmas time you see it too. Now, I would say the solution to that is not to try to be adult, but rather try to deepen that sense of the child. So if you're being childish, maybe what's required is to do what we've been talking about today, about being more in touch with a more solid, maybe more positive kind of child.
You mentioned earlier the idea of reinvigorating Christmas in the sense of being with children, you know, hanging out with children, which I think is a great idea. And I also think hanging out with dogs and cats is a particularly nice idea. Now, I don't have a dog, but I visited a friend the other day who had adopted from a rescue service a 10-year-old Dalmatian who is just an incredible dog, you know, mm-hmm. and just getting down on that dog and tussling on the floor, you know, until you can fight with dogs and you can roughhouse with dogs.
Right.
And I think that's just great. And I think it's another way of doing it.
I do, too. I've been staying with my dog. I have a little dog, and he sits under my desk when I write all the time. And, you know, he really shows me a lot, teaches me a lot daily. I mean, he's just sitting there quietly. He hasn't spoken yet. I keep waiting. But he says so much and without talking. And that brings back this notion of Santa Claus again, if I can, and since it's my favorite little topic of the day. Santa Claus has his animals, too. He has his reindeer. Which are really interesting, you know. They have names, and they allow him to go all over the world. It's quite a very interesting theme, you know, if you take it apart a bit. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing we can do as adults is be like Santa. That is, he really devotes his entire life to children. So he's there up at the North Pole. That's a way of saying that he's not part of this world that we have created. He's up there at the very North Pole, where he's happy to be outside of all this thing, and he has a toy shop up there. So I think that's a good model for us, that we could all not only be the child, we could also be Santa all the time, as he is every day of the year. And we could be focused on children and thinking about children every day and what children need.
Mm-hmm.
I am absolutely, you know, I just get torn up when I think about all the kids that are in such terrible shape in our world. I mean, how many kids are, you know, the same litany of things, starving, caught up in wars, being abused in homes. It's hard to imagine, you know, your heart just can't hold it when you think about the children who are suffering.
Oh, yeah.
And if we had a Santa spirit, that's a Holy Spirit. Santa means holy. If we have that Holy Spirit, which is focused on children, you know, all the time, never taken away from being able to, you know, think about what kids need. And in every single instance, when you see a child to do something to help them in some way, I think about this for my dad. He's been like that all his life. Every single minute he sees a child, he sees the child and responds to the child and gives the child something to make him feel better or be a little happy or to laugh. And I think we could all do that.
Mm-hmm. I guess, I mean, it sounds like a cliche if I say this, but, you know, the idea of taking the focus off ourselves and looking at what the other person might need or might enjoy, you know, and saying something kind to them or saying something that will make them laugh, if you know how to do that. You know, I think that's really important, too.
That's the Christmas spirit. And it's funny, and it's for people who think of Christmas in relation to the Christian tradition, that's what's there, too. That's what the gospel does. And that's what other religions who celebrate similar celebrations at this time of year also do. You know, good stories, gift giving, a sense of cheer and friendliness. But this is meant, as Santa Claus says, to be there all year round.
Yeah. Thomas, are any... sometimes I think there's a book I can read or a movie I can see that brings out these childlike qualities in me. Do you have any particular book that you turn to or a poem that you turn to or a movie that you rewatch? A friend of mine loves Groundhog Day, the Bill Murray film, and he loves that, and he watches it every couple of months, I think. And anything that reawakens the child in you?
Well, I guess... I love to. I mean, what I do sometimes is watch reruns of stand-up comics. I think the stand-up comic is really a very important figure, and just someone who can tell jokes in a way that just really get you laughing. Laughter is really a big part of the child. Mm-hmm. Be able to. I think sometimes when we get older, our laughter gets cynical or it gets a little, you know, dark, and to be able to have that child kind of laughter. I go back, as I say, I've been around a while, so I go back to the old movies. Like, I still like really the old-time movies like Laurel and Hardy and things like that. I will watch some real old movie, you know, Groucho Marx or somebody. That is from my childhood, you know, from my days, and that was really funny. And I do return to that spirit of childhood when I do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a concept in our culture, and I can't figure out, and maybe you can help me here, whether it's something that's real or it's a cliche. If you remember the song from the musical South Pacific, you got to have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how are you going to have a dream come true? Remember that song, Happy Talk? And people say, well, what kind of dream do you have for your life? And part of me says, well, yeah, maybe there ought to be a dream. And part of me says, well, that's a cliche, and really we're here right now, and let's just enjoy this moment. And what do you think of that idea that we have in our culture?
Well, I have to say that I'm not a person who likes to live in the here and now. I don't believe in that as a lot
really?
Of people do. No, I don't really. I live in the then, you know. I live in the past. The past is very important to me. I try to recreate the past. I like old things. I like to have things around that remind me of my childhood and my growing up. And I don't worry about living in the now. If I'm daydreaming, if I'm remembering things, if I'm not really focused now, that's great. I mean, if I can get out of the now, I'm happy. To me, it's a form of meditation and contemplation. So I play the piano for that reason. I'm not in the here and now, really, when I'm doing that. I'm in some other space altogether. So I don't worry about that at all. I think that's a sentimental kind of idea myself. I mean, I know most people I know disagree with me, but I don't care. So I love the idea of nostalgia, you know, and living in a style that's old-fashioned and maybe dressing in an old-fashioned way, being out of sync with the times. All of that, to me, is wonderful because it's a form of breaking through into imagination. I mean, the past, going into the past can be a way of having your imagination come alive instead of being so focused in the present where your imagination is not engaged quite so much as your attention. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be in imagination than fully attending.
That's interesting because I know certain, you know, religious persuasions try to train people through meditation to focus on the present, to give attention right here. But you don't agree with that?
I don't, not at all, no.
That's interesting.
No, I think it's sentimental. I really do. I hear people talk about it, and they say, oh, wonderful to be right there in the here and now. And I think, what is that smile on their face? That looks a little like, you know, it's a little too sentimental and sweet to me. Like it's some moralism, too. You really have to do this, and don't slip out of it. and you really focus and really, you know, and prepare yourself by meditating. Well, I'd rather watch an old movie and, you know, get it and kind of get back in touch with the world that I knew that has a lot of romance and imagination, where my heart comes alive. I think that, to me, is more the life of the soul. That's where the soul and spirit are different.
Really,
I think it's a very spiritual thing to say, be in the now. And I think the soul loves the past and memory and enchantment and romance.
And imagination and fantastical
and imagination things. And fantasy and,
yeah.
And being out of sync with things and having everyone think you're really not up to date. And all. I think it's wonderful to do that.
I've always loved fantastical stories and romantic memories of, you know, I agree with you on that one. let us go. Our callers are here. Vivian. Hello, Vivian.
Hi. Fred, you mentioned what type of movies or what movie
yeah.
I come to mind that makes you feel like a child.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, with me, and I've seen it dozens of times, I think, or nearly that much, is the movie Big with Tom Hanks.
I remember that, yeah.
And every time I see it, the different nuances. But and I recommend that everyone rent it and watch it. It
mm-hmm.
takes me hours to shake off the feeling of being a child. I will answer the phone or handle a problem that comes up after seeing that movie in a totally different voice. Seeing the problem in a totally different way, it's very strange. I have to actually force myself to go back a little bit to reacting to things like an adult after seeing that movie. It has a million different aspects to it about how a child reacts to life that we never would even think of until we see this movie. It was absolutely perfect, and every time I see it, it's all new again. And I'd like people to try to see it and experience possibly what I feel when I see that movie.
Vivian, can you say quickly what the theme of the movie is? What happens to Tom Hanks?
Oh, boy. He becomes magically a boy again.
Yeah.
By making a wish.
Mm-hmm.
And has to live in the real world that's right. He becomes a boy again emotionally, but not physically.
But not
that's
physically.
Right. I forgot
yeah.
about that.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, he's in the real world and reacts to everything from finding a job to keeping the job to meeting women to other friends, going out with friends, going to parties in a childlike way, totally as a 13-year-old, or maybe he was 11.
Yeah, I'm gonna. I know you remember. I'm gonna have to see that one again. That's a marvelous theme, isn't it? And I remember it being very, very well done.
But I'm telling you, everyone will feel. It just gets inside of you
mm-hmm.
that all of a sudden, I feel more relaxed after seeing that movie, and my voice, how I respond to someone coming up to me
mm-hmm.
for the next few hours is totally different. It's very bizarre.
Wow.
And it's nice. And, of course, after about a few hours or maybe even sometimes a day, it goes away.
Goes away. But you can watch it again. Thank you, Vivian. Got to move
exactly.
on. We only have a couple of minutes left here to talk with Sarah. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. I've read both books, Care of the Soul and Soulmates, and I love them because they do focus on being grounded in who you are and your past and the everyday things of life, which is wonderful. A question I had, there was a quote that struck me years ago, and I think about it almost every day. You had said, "It's my conviction that slight shifts in imagination have more impact on living than major efforts at change."
Yes, I remember that.
And I was just curious in terms of how do you so it's wonderful when you have an epiphany and you do have that
mm-hmm.
shift in imagination
mm-hmm.
that can open up a whole new perspective on life.
Mm-hmm.
How can you initiate try to have, you know, open your...
Sarah, are you still with us?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you can do that by... being open to events that happen all the time. I think we have opportunities every day to have a new imagination of things. Although it's not easy because I think the hardest part is that we just get caught up in the habits that we have and habits of thinking. So we pass them over. I find for myself that the reading certain writers open me up all the time. Like I like to read D.H. Lawrence. I read Jung every day and some religious texts like the Tao Te Ching. And they always open me up to see the world slightly differently. Lately, I've been looking at the Gospels very closely because I've just finished a book on them. So I find a whole new imagination that was just incredible from a new approach there. So there are a lot of sources, but I think it's like educating yourself to a new imagination.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Thank you.
Okay, Sarah G., you know, we're sorry we can't get to everybody here because we only have about 45 seconds, and that wouldn't be fair. Well, Tom, I think I'm going to go out and just to make sure that today I am very childlike.
You know, I think you can get a really big squirt gun. Have you seen those, the really big ones?
Yeah, but I'm thinking, yeah. I'm thinking paintball. Thomas Moore, author of Care of the Soul and his new book, A Life at Work, The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. Tom, always a great pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Pleasure for me, too. Thanks, Brad.
When we come back, we'll have movie critics here from Columbus and Central Ohio, the best movies in town, on listener-supported WOSU, WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.